You are listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. Chapter 12, Travok. Four elves wearing brown tunics, marked with the crest of Altair, stood clustered around a fifth. It was notoriously hard to tell elven men and women apart, and the uniforms were not helping. Their faces were all smooth, their eyes were all startlingly pale, their jaws were all strong, and their lashes were long enough to sweep the forest floor. Of course, their skin tones varied, but the way their faces all caught the light was the same, glittering as if dusted with jewels. The elf in the middle, though, stood out. He was a man. Travok was sure of it. There was something about the way he stood, the way he took up space, the way his eyes traveled across their group, challenging and charming them all with one slow glance. "Retini!" he called out, his voice cutting across the air like a knife. The four elves stilled, fingers frozen on bowstrings. Then the man snapped and gestured with a lazy hand to Ren. All four of the uniform guards turned in unison and pointed their aim at the woman standing just behind Travok. The wizard glanced at Ren and took a few shuffling steps to his left.
"Bon vent, Vita Donner,"
he said in Elvish, dipping into a low bow, then asked in Manon,
"May I assume I have the pleasure of speaking with Bonora Stonebreaker, Queen of Durandal?"
"I am," the queen replied, eyeing the archers and straightening her back. "And whom do I have the honor of speaking with?"
"Ah,"
he said, coming back to his full height and flashing a smile that forced Travok to hide a grimace.
"I am His Royal Highness Zitril, Prince of Altair."
He walked forward with a strange sort of grace, slowly and deliberately putting one foot in front of the other, drawing the eye and holding the attention. The sun glittered off the bronze and gold highlights of his hair. His skin was the pale light of the morning dawn, and his eyes were the frozen blue of a waterfall in winter. He wore the green and brown of the archers to his left and right, but his vest was fine and fitted, threaded through with black, silver, and gold. The message was clear. These guards might have been the trees that made up the forest, but their leader was the light that filtered through their branches. A wavering, wispy light unspooled behind the archers' backs, and a thrall's mocking cackle ricocheted around Travok. He reached for the wall in his mind, forcing it up before a thrall could take shape or their taunts could find words.
"The honor is all ours, Your Highness," Brenora said, giving a slight nod of her head that turned into a more respectful bow after Seraphina nudged her in the ribs. "You seem to have found us, just in the nick of time."
"Ah, think nothing of it," the prince said with a triumphant smile. "It is my duty as a member of the royal family to protect this forest and the people in it. And the marchand de Neuit have been scattering livestock and frightening children since I was a child myself. Though these were behaving very strangely. You almost never see a marchand in the daylight."
"Your children must be made of sterner stuff than most to be merely frightened of these creatures. Thank the four you found us when you did,"
Varys said. It was getting harder to keep the thrall at bay. He had tried denying it, tried telling himself it was because he was tired or distracted, but he knew that was a lie. Ever since entering these woods, Travok could feel them, like water slowly leaking through his coat and down his back, always there, always slowly and steadily pushing at his defenses. Even now, when he knew the wall was securely in place, he could still see them trying, little flickering lights seeping into the corners of his vision, keeping him from focusing on the conversation at hand. His head throbbed, and Travok resisted the urge to massage in between his eyes.
"Well, we are certainly grateful to you, sir," Seraphina said, stepping forward into the conversation and dipping into a low curtsy.
"I am Seraphina Morningstar, but of course,"
Zithril interrupted, reaching forward to take Seraphina by both her hands and helping her from her crouch.
"The Alteric soldier who fought by the queen and is now her lady-in-waiting."
An absolute joy to meet you,
he said, kissing the air above both Seraphina's hands.
And that would make that man,
Zithril continued, gesturing with a finger to Trevok without looking in his direction.
A member of your guard? That would make you,
he said, turning back to Varys.
The Golem Ambassador?
That would be me, Varys said with a smile.
And that would make you,
Zithril said, executing a dancer's turn to face Rin.
Unexpected.
But hopefully not unwelcome, Rin smiled, keeping her hands plainly visible and sending a meaningful glance in the direction of the weapons still aimed at her.
Forgive me,
the prince said as he prowled past Trevok.
We are cautious people. Surprises make us jumpy.
He stopped in front of Rin, toes of his boots inches from her feet.
Bisivol's armament,
he called over his shoulder, telling the guards to lower their weapons as he smiled down at the woman in front of him.
Lucky for you,
the prince said in a whisper that could be heard by all.
I love surprises.
Grati nasia,
Rin said, curtsying. Not an inch of her flinched, not a crumb of her demurred. It was infuriating. Trevok had already decided to dislike this prince, but what gave Rin the right to act as if she was royalty's equal?
You'll speak Elvish,
Zithril asked, sounding delighted.
Only enough to bluff my way through a ballroom, and very badly at that,
Rin answered with a shrug and a smile.
Thomas, j'aimerais entendre ma belle langue en passant par telle belle lèvre.
Words spoken like an intimate caress. Trevok was not as fluent in Elvish as he had hoped, and it was tricky for him to keep up with this dialect. However, the words roughly translated to, shame, I long to hear my beautiful language passing through such beautiful lips. Trevok stifled a groan and rolled his eyes.
What's the matter, Trevok?
The thrall whispered, wrapping their voice around his shoulders and pushing themselves into his ear.
Are you upset that the girl might be getting above herself? Or maybe you're just concerned she might be getting above you?
Stop it, stop it, stop it,
he yelled in his own head as he watched Rin step forward, a smile teasing at the corner of her lips.
I have no idea what you just said, sir, but I am certain it was meant to make me blush, she whispered before leaning even closer and saying, I promise you, sir, if you are wanting to bring color to these cheeks, you will need to try harder than that.
Trevok almost choked. How was this possible? Where was her decency? Where was the prince's decency? Could they not see the entire crowd of people behind them?
Try harder?
Zithril asked, lowering his voice to match her husky tone.
Is that a challenge?
I love challenges almost as much as I love surprises.
Which do you love more? Surprises? Challenges? Or audiences?
Rin asked, nodding to the group behind him.
Shh, do not make me choose,
the prince said, lips pursed in an annoying pout. Then, as if finally remembering himself, Zithril pulled back and pitched his voice to be heard by all.
I love all those things, demoiselle, but what I currently require is an explanation. Why are you in this forest without invitation?
I have an invitation of sorts, Rin replied, reaching into a pocket and passing something large and gold to the prince. My mistress lives in Whitesilver, but is a daughter of your people. Because of some, let's call them youthful indiscretions, she has lost a precious family heirloom. She believes that it's hiding somewhere in your kingdom and has sent me to fetch it.
Youthful indiscretions?
Zithril repeated, tapping the gold ornament on his hand in thought.
May I ask for the specifics?
I do not think my mistress would appreciate me sharing the details.
Your mistress must trust you greatly to give you something like this,
the prince said, waving what looked like a gold engraving of a tree in the air for emphasis. She does.
And you must be loyal to travel this way?
Hence the trust, Rin answered. Not blinking, not backing down, just straightening her back and adding,
We are more like friends than mistress and servant.
Ah, something Her Majesty and Lady Morningstar would know a little about, no?
Zithril said, smiling at the Queen and Seraphina before turning back to Rin and tossing her the gold in his hands.
All right.
All right? Rin asked, raising a skeptical eyebrow as she caught the bauble in her hand.
All right,
Zithril confirmed, smiling, extending an arm to Rin.
Come, stay with your friends in the palace. I insist. I am sure there is an extra bed and a hot bath. We could...
That's all?
The outrage was out of Travok's mouth before he could think better of it.
But it was outrageous. Why did this keep happening? How did this plain, mousy, arrogant girl keep talking her way into kingdoms and royal delegations? Was he the only one in possession of common sense?
All eyes turned to Travok. Ithril began to laugh again. And again, Travok shoved their voice behind the wall. He watched the prince consider him, measuring and dismissing Travok with a quick up and down flick of his eyes.
Who are you?
Lieutenant Travok Blackstone, Your Highness.
Travok stammered, placing his fist on his chest in a salute before bowing.
Well, Trodic,
Zithril said with a cool smile, and Travok knew the mispronunciation had been intentional.
Yes, that is all.
Then he turned and addressed the rest of the group.
It is really quite fortuitous you run this way, Your Majesty. These are the back walls of Altair.
The words were casual, but the effect was jarring. Travok looked at his companions and saw identical looks of shock splashed across all their faces.
Altair?
Already? Seraphina asked, stunned as the rest of them.
I thought we were at least 2 days out.
The forest was wrong. Those were the words the queen kept saying. But until this moment, Travok had not taken the time to understand what she meant. It was always easy to lose your way in the wood, to lose track of time, to wander off the path. But how much time had they lost if they were already 2 days ahead of schedule? How turned around could they be if they were practically standing at the back gates and not realizing it? The silence surrounded them, weighing down on their shoulders, threatening to crush Travok's sanity.
You make good time, the prince shrugged. In fact, if you all would be willing to follow me, you will even be ahead of schedule.
Our things, Seraphina stuttered. Our clothing, the host gift, everything we have is back at the camp.
My servants will fetch your coach and drive it the rest of the way. And the palace has plenty of clothing and necessities to lend you till they arrive with all your things.
Seraphina looked at the queen, having one of their silent conversations before informing the rest of them of their choices.
Come,
the prince said.
It is an hour walk or 2 day journey. To me, the math is simple, but perhaps you enjoy the company of the forest?
Travok fought down a shudder and glanced at the queen. She was feeling the weight of this wood more than any of them. Her skin was pale and clammy, and even from here, Travok could see her struggling to stay on her feet.
Your Highness, the queen said at last, thank you for your hospitality. Please lead the way.
They followed the wall of the cliff till they came to an entrance to a cave. It was a perfect circle, a perfect hole cut into the rock by the hands of mortals instead of being eroded away by the will of time and nature. As they walked forward, the tunnel became tiled, thousands of little white squares spinning across the walls, floor, and ceiling of the cave, circling overhead and underfoot, spiraling forward into the black.
How do you feel?
Varys asked the queen. The three of them, Varys, the queen, and Travok, had lingered behind the rest of the group, eyes trained on Zithril's back.
Like I'm about to be sick all over my feet?
And you?
I'm about to bust right out of my skin,
Varys answered.
I can't stop taking in energy. It's too much.
And Seraphina is feeling this as well. Her abilities. She's becoming more sensitive.
What's happening?
The queen demanded in a whisper that still bounced around the stone hall.
And how could the prince not be affected?
We do not know yet if the prince and his people can feel this. We are all experiencing these effects differently. Perhaps they just feel it in a way that we cannot see,
Travok suggested, his voice low, eyes fixed to the front.
It could be the rift,
Varys offered. The queen and Travok sent the golem a quick and worried glance.
How would something like that even be possible? Travok breathed. We are nowhere near close enough to the rift to be experiencing anything like this. I'm not sure,
Varys shrugged.
But what I've felt at the rift by Rage's shield is the only thing I have to compare this to.
How close would we need to be? The queen asked, reaching out a hand to steady herself against the wall. The giant made a non-committal noise and shrugged.
I'm not sure,
he said.
I remember feeling this way, a mile, maybe two, from the rift guarded by my people. But we have been feeling these effects since we entered the woods,
Travok said, and Varys nodded.
Yes, and it's stronger, though my people have been actively trying to shrink our rift and absorb whatever leftover energy it puts out into the world, so I might not be the best judge on what a normal, untouched rift would do to mortal people.
The three of them lapsed into thoughtful silence for a few steps, before the queen asked, Could you help us close the rift in Durrandir?
My people would be honored,
Varys said, pride radiating through his voice.
Though, to be fair, we are not sure that the rifts can be closed, only contained.
This way, keep up,
the prince called, words floating around the air, bouncing off the walls till they dissolved into nothing. Prince Zithril, Serafina, and Rin waited for them by a slick, moss-covered door.
Your Majesty, honored and unexpected guests,
he said with a smile at Rin,
I am pleased to present you with your first glimpse of the Chosen Kingdom.
The prince pushed open the door with a bow, allowing the light to stream in and briefly blind Travok. His eyes and brain shrieked in pain, and Travok could have sworn he heard a thrall sigh with pleasure. Then Rin gasped.
God surround me. What on mortal earth is that?
Travok blinked away the pain and found himself standing on a hill. Travok had always wanted to visit the elves. He wanted to learn from these crafters of tales and lovers of stories. As a boy, he had stared at the drawings of their elegant forest kingdom and longed to be with them. However, what stretched below was nothing like his boyhood illustrations. It was a building laid out like a giant glass cross, so large that it boggled the mind. Millions of bricks, thousands of stairs, miles upon miles of hallway. Instead of a forest, there were meticulously organized gardens and hedge mazes. Instead of waterfalls and streams, there were fountains and artificial pools. It was a methodical and complete taming of chaos, a destruction of nature. It broke Travok's heart for reasons he could not quite name, and it was not even the most disturbing thing in his eyesight.
That, Demoiselle, is Altrière, the palace city. It is beautiful, no?
She was talking about the rift.
Travok's voice was cold and detached as he came forward, running his fingers through his hair.
But why? Why is it?
Just behind the palace, no more than an hour's walk from the far gate, was what looked like a deep, black slash in the ground. The cut stretched for miles in all directions. It was eating the physical world around it, pulling in the ground, the light, the color. Travok could even feel himself being drawn forward, fighting against a current, caught in a whirlpool to be dragged to the depths of some unfathomably large and empty sea.
Why is it so big?
Varys shouted, turning to the prince.
The rift is as it always has been,
Zithril replied, flitting a hand through the air.
If that is true, then your kingdom has a very large problem, because I can guarantee you that,
Varys pointed with a wrathful finger at the rift,
whole in reality is not supposed to be that big.
Varys towered over the elven prince, teeth bared, power snapping in his voice. the world got very quiet. The guard's fingers twitched on bowstrings. Serafina's hand traveled slowly to the sword at her side. Even the wind held its breath. Prince Zithril picked a stray piece of dirt off his shoulder and sighed.
Were you there at the rift's making?
He asked conversationally.
No,
Varys answered, still glaring down at the smaller man.
Neither was I. So, how are either of us meant to know how the rift is supposed to look?
Varys opened his mouth to argue, but Zithril spoke over him.
Tell me, what is your role here? Are you meant to pass judgment? Or are you meant to bear witness?
Varys silently gritted his teeth.
Ah, I see.
Zithril's smile was so cool it would not melt butter.
May I suggest, Monsieur Ambassador, that you do the job that is assigned to you, and you keep your judgments to yourself, or at least phrase them in a more respectful question. Not everyone within those walls will be as lenient and forgiving as I.
Chapter 13. Wren. Wren did not like how easily Altair's gates opened for her. Originally, her plan had been to come down with some mysterious fever that would force the others to take her into the kingdom, where an overworked and distracted physician would not notice if a patient went missing. Somehow, Wren doubted Prince Zithril's attention would be so easily diverted. Wren was well acquainted with this sort of man, the kind that did not need a beautiful dance partner dangling off his arm. No, what he required was a willing sparring partner to test out turns of phrase. In the woods, with arrows pointed at her and the need to get inside Altair looming over her shoulder, Wren had been happy to play the part. However, now that the thought thief and the prince were strolling arm in arm down the hallways of the palace, Wren could not help but question every choice that had brought her to this place and this moment. A sensible person would have run. A sensible person would have never willingly entered the massive fortress that was the Hidden Kingdom. And a sensible person would have never gone near a rift. Apparently, Wren was not a sensible person because she had walked herself, of her own free will, closer to the black and purple jaws of death in pursuit of wealth and egged on by curiosity. She had never seen a rift before, never seen the dark and daunting doorway between worlds. It was terrifying, that open maw that would devour her whole, that physical line where existence as she knew it stopped and the unknown began. It was terrifying, but it was also intriguing. Once, when honor and faith were both still young enough to hold on her lap, Wren had seen a sea beast. She still was not sure if it was a shark or a whale that had passed under their little boat that day, only that its wake had threatened to capsize them, and that the shadow that passed beneath them was twice the ship's length. There had been two impulses inside her that day. The first was to pull into herself, become as small as possible, and hope to be forgotten. The second was to reach out a hand and touch the monster as it passed, to feel its sea-slick skin slip under her fingers, the desire to know what it was. She had the same feeling looking at the rift. A part of her wanted to run all the way back to Whitesilver, grab Rita and the children and keep running. And yet, another part of her wanted to step forward, to peek inside, to learn what waited for her beyond the darkness.
It is beautiful, no?
Zithril asked, gesturing at the grand stone columns and large windows as they glided down the hall. Stunning, Wren said, realizing she had been silent since Zithril and she had left the queen and her party at their rooms. The hall was all glass windows and marble floors, lined with servants dressed like porcelain dolls and standing at attention like soldiers. The ghosts of their reflection kept pace with them as the prince and Wren walked together, wraiths that bobbed at the side of Wren's eyes, making her feel like she was being followed and watched.
It is so quiet here, she laughed, trying not to stare at the statue still men and women to either side of her, Normally, a palace like this is humming with activity.
My father abhors the sound of echoes, but loves the local polished stone. So the servants have all been trained to keep silent,
Zithril shrugged. That must make parties awfully dull, Rin said, raising an eyebrow.
Ah, for those, we force the old man to wear earplugs,
the prince said, smiling into her ear as they pulled to a stop by a nondescript door, pushing it open with a little flourish.
After you, Demoiselle.
The contrast between the hall outside and the corridor she had just walked into was startling. She felt it first in her ears. The ringing echoes of grand marble and gold were replaced with the simple silence of wood and stone. It was well lit, the light reflecting off subtle pulsating patterns along the wall. But for the life of her, Rin could not see how. From what little she could see, the monochromed beige halls were windowless and winding, wide in some places and painfully narrow in others.
Are we in the walls of the palace? Rin asked, smirking at the prince as if they were playing a game and she was trying to understand the rules.
The servant's passage, yes,
Zithril answered, stepping in front of her.
Come, follow me.
Rin's eyes traveled up to the ceiling, which held the only bit of color in the hall. Four strips, red, green, yellow, and blue, had been painted overhead. Rin followed the lines with her eyes as they moved forward, using them to mentally trace her way back to the door.
It would be easy for a person to get lost in a place like this, Rin said, one eye on the strips of color, the other on Zithril's back.
I will not lie to you, Demoiselle. That is half the point in coming here. A person unfamiliar with these halls could easily get lost for a lifetime in this hidden part about here. It is the only place to have a private conversation in the whole kingdom.
A hidden part of the hidden kingdom, Rin asked archly, adding,
how private a conversation are we meant to be having?
Whatever could you mean, Demoiselle?
He asked, voice knowing as they turned the corner and drew to a stop.
How appropriate a conversation? Rin asked with a teasing smile.
Appropriate?
Zithril gasped, putting a hand to his chest in mock defense.
Demoiselle, I am always appropriate. I am a perfect gentleman.
Rin stepped forward to run a finger lightly over the fine embroidery of his vest.
You may dress like a gentleman, but you flirt like a scoundrel.
Then, slowly moving her eyes up the length of his body, said,
I am just wondering, Nircia, what I will have to trade for my bed tonight.
Zithril smiled down at her, catching her hand with his, pressing it to his chest.
Careful, Demoiselle. If you do not let me chase you, this game will lose all its fun. But do not worry. You will have to give something of yourself tonight.
And what is that? Rin asked, worried she already knew the answer.
Explanations.
I gave you an explanation in the woods.
You gave me a story and a piece of jewelry, which is more than enough as far as I am concerned. However, my father will want more.
Zithril stepped away from her to lean against the wall and grin.
Tell me, do you know about my family's abilities?
Rin had heard vague rumors of the Altarian royal family's telepathic abilities. Some had said it was a gift from the Aethrosh, bestowed upon the King of Altair during the Great War as a reward for his loyalty. Others had said it was an unnatural consequence of living so close to one of the rifts. It was impossible to separate fact from fiction in all the stories of the Hidden Kingdom, but Rin had wondered if this was a test she was going to have to face.
Somewhat, she answered, eyeing him skeptically and weighing her options.
If permitted, I could see your thoughts, maybe even read your soul. That, Demoiselle, will be the price of a bed.
Rin bit her lip and looked at Zithril, arranging her face into a cautious and skeptical mask. Mind magic. And you know what you are doing?
Of course, I was born doing it,
the prince replied, shrugging his shoulders and throwing his arms wide. Rin highly doubted this. Mind magic was a rare and delicate art. It was less taboo for mortals touched or blessed with certain abilities to practice these talents in the open than it was for Rin to seek out and study them. However, in her experience, the individuals with these gifts rarely took the time to understand or master them, and thus had no idea the damage they could do. She had no desire to be reduced to a drooling, giggling sack of skin and bones because this prince did not know how to tread lightly in her mind. Still, what choice did she have? She was trapped and alone, with a prince, in a secret hallway, in an isolated kingdom. There was no way out but forward, and this was the price that had to be paid. Zithril pushed away from the wall, extended his arms, and Rin took his hands. As soon as Zithril's fingers closed around hers, the world washed away like sand caught in a wave, replaced with the streets of white silver. The prince stood next to a Rin with long, braided hair, wearing a well-made and serviceable dress, fit for the daughter of a wealthy merchant.
You cut your hair,
Zithril mused, studying the image before him. Rin did not move. The prince scowled and bent down to wave a hand in front of her face. Rin did not so much as turn her head in acknowledgement of the prince. Zithril snorted, and then stared up and down the empty cobblestone street.
I was hoping for a little company, Demoiselle,
he said, throwing up his hands as he called for her.
A little guidance, perhaps? I cannot be held responsible for what I do in here if I am left unsupervised.
Still, she said nothing. Zithril groaned and looked up to the sky for inspiration. He squinted and pursed his lips before coming to a decision. Snapping his fingers in front of her face, he said,
All right, what are we meant to be doing here?
I am meeting a friend, Rin answered, trying to do her best impression of a woman in a trance.
Which friend?
Zithril asked, with no small amount of impatience.
She is in there, Rin replied, in a dull, vacant voice as she fought the urge to giggle.
Zithril sighed.
Fine, fine. Allons-y,
he said, with a resigned roll of his wrist. They proceeded forward like a dream. One moment they were outside the wreck, the next the world folded around them, spinning, rippling, shifting till they were standing inside the pub. Rin did not bother to add in the details. The prince did not need to smell the sweat of the patrons or feel the heat of the ovens. For that matter, neither did she. No, she kept the world in a muted black and white, because the only thing that needed to be seen was Atea. Rin changed the story to suit her needs and show her client in the best possible light. She elevated her own status from woman of dubious standing to adventurous merchant's daughter. And Atea was no longer hiring a freelancer to fix her mistakes, but instead turning to her dearest friend in her hour of need. The two women ran to each other and embraced, Rin clinging to Atea's shoulders as the half-elf girl cried into her hair. Rin was enjoying playing her part. She loved imagining who this version of herself might be as she soothed Atea and listened to her tale of woe. She was the more daring of the two friends, the more worldly, the better traveled. She was exactly the kind of friend a sheltered gentlewoman would turn to with a problem like this. Rin was halfway to writing the story of how this unlikely friendship would have come to be when she noticed Zithril's attention fraying around the edges. Zithril was bored with the little story playing out in front of him almost as soon as he had entered her mind. Yes, there clearly was a scandal here, but he knew none of the people involved, and Rin had hidden all the more salacious details from him. He had watched the friends' reunion out of obligation, not interest, and he was looking for an exit moments after they had all sat down. But then there was a shift. A cold breeze that crawled like a spider up Rin's arm and down the back of her neck. And she knew Zithril's attention was gone. She looked up to find him staring across the room at a black shape. It looked like clouds, moved like a bag of snakes, and scared Rin so badly that for a brief moment she considered saying a prayer. It rolled forward, slowly forming the shape of a body.
"What are you? Why are you here?"
Zithril demanded, standing to meet the silent form as it stretched out welcoming arms of writhing smoke.
"You called me. You are always calling me."
Its voice was a whisper that froze Rin's blood in her veins.
"I did not call you. I do not want you. I will never want you."
The sunny day outside the windows turned black, and thunder cracked across the sky with the prince's words.
"Accept your fate, boy." "Never,"
was his whispered reply. Zithril's shoulders were square, his fists were clenched, and the thunder boomed ever louder. Rin swallowed against a lump of nerves that had just formed in her throat. She knew it. She knew this cocky prince did not know what he was doing. Rin jumped up and brought her foot down with all her might on the floor, shattering the boards into a million pieces and sending her falling into the nothingness between thoughts. As she fell into the void, she reached up and grabbed Zithril's ankle, pulling him down with her. They were spinning, cartwheeling, corkscrewing through nothing as little scraps of scenery floated by. A vase of flowers here, an open doorway, an overheard argument there. They were safe. Rin knew they were safe. She could keep them suspended in this vacuum of the in-between for the rest of their lives if she wished. But she could also feel Zithril's confusion and fear, like a cold sweat of seasickness coating her skin. So long as the prince was afraid, that thing would find them. She had seen monsters like that before, creatures born out of dread and anxiety. It would sniff out the person who had created it, consume them, and then wreak merry havoc in whatever mind it still occupied. She needed to pull the prince's attention away from whatever was feeding this beast. She needed to get them both out of her mind. She needed to create a place for them to land. She needed to find a door. A book flew by, hitting Rin in the face before sailing off into the black. As she rubbed at her nose and inwardly cursed the bygone projectile, an idea gripped her. It was a mad idea, something created by desperation, insanity, and the late nights spent with Rita giggling over lurid stories after the children had been put to bed. Rin set the scene in her mind, the daughter's cabin on the merchant ship, early morning sun filtering through the window, a tangle of bed sheets. As soon as the picture was in her mind, it came to life. They both fell into the nest of blankets and linens. She waited a beat to catch her breath and memorize her lines. Then she rolled over, stretched, and faced a very confused and very naked prince.
"What happened?"
Zithril asked, cradling his head in his hands, elbows propped on blanketed knees. Rin gasped in surprise, scuttled to the far side of the bed, and protectively clutched the covers to her chest. "Who are you? Where's Lavar?" she demanded, glaring at the prince with all the startled scorn she could muster.
"What are you talking?"
the prince started, but trailed off as their eyes met.
"Wait, you can see me?"
"At the moment, I am seeing far too much of you, sir," Rin spat, sending a meaningful glance at his bare chest. Zithril looked down and smiled as if finally getting the joke.
"Ah, yes, this is a little awkward, no? But, demoiselle, please try to remember."
The prince reached forward and Rin stubbornly pulled away.
"No, I do not remember. One moment I'm lying next to Lavar. What is a Lavar?
And the next moment, you are in my bed." Rin got up, taking the blankets with her to preserve her modesty, and thus fully exposing Zithril. She slapped a hand over her eyes and threw her head back.
"And now I have made it worse. How could I possibly have made this worse?" "You know, there are some who would argue that you just made things better,"
His Royal Highness said, and Rin could practically smell the smugness in his voice. She grabbed a pillow off a nearby chair and threw it onto the prince's lap, covering his most essential features.
"I have no idea who you are," Rin said,
pulling Zithril off the bed and shoving him towards the door. And I have no idea who put you up to this little prank. But if my father hears about this, you are a dead man. Demoiselle, wait. No. Rin put her whole hand over his face and forcibly pushed him out the door and into an empty hallway beyond. And Sinlabar back in were her last shouted words before she slammed the door shut. The force of the closing door sent them both crashing back into reality. And in the next breath, Rin was staring up into Zithril's leering face. She took a calculated risk and slapped him. The prince rubbed his face but continued to grin.
I suppose I deserve that. But in my defense, the mind is a tricky place and I cannot always control where I go and what I see.
Then perhaps you should learn, Rin sniffed, before asking, so, did I pass the test?
With flying colors, Demoiselle.
And, as your reward? Zithril reached behind him, splaying his fingers against the wall, sliding them back as if he was a white-gloved butler checking for dust. There was a clicking and a rolling sound, like wheels sliding onto a track. And then, to Ren's complete astonishment, the wall disappeared, gliding to one side to reveal a room.
After you, Demoiselle,
the prince said with a bow. Rin stepped past him into the room beyond. She tried not to let her amazement show. Surely the woman she was pretending to be would be used to accommodations like this. In fact, judging by the lack of ornate decorations, this room was meant for unexpected guests and poor relations. However, Rin had not walked on carpet this luxurious in years. The boot-shaped room was decorated in calming creams and mahogany trim. A gold bathtub sat on a stage in the toe of the boot, and a large bed was comfortably nestled in its heel. The room was larger than Rita's entire house.
There is a small salon through there, Zithril said,
pointing to a set of doors opposite them.
Vanity and wardrobe are there and there for when you need them.
Thank you, Rin said, as she moved to examine her face in the vanity mirror. She was coated in dirt and grime, and her hair was sticking up in the back, but she had looked worse, and the prince did not seem to mind.
So, this woman you are helping, she is your mistress or your friend?
Zithril asked, coming to stand a fraction too close to her and checking his own flawless reflection. Rin could feel his heat pressing into her back, and she smirked at the brazenness of it. A bit of both, Rin lied, turning to block the prince's view and openly admire his physique. Her father is my father's patron. I thought calling her my mistress would make things simpler. He looked at her with his crystal blue eyes and a face full of sunshine in a way that was probably meant to make her melt right through the floor. However, Rin could not shake the feeling that the heat in his eyes was pure calculation. And so, she leaned back against the table and fixed him with a look of her own. Zithril shook his head and let out a quiet chuckle.
How did I get so lucky to have a woman such as you wander into my forest?
He said with a frank and mischievous smile. Rin opened her mouth to answer, but before she could, the prince was moving, grinning like a fool and bouncing on his feet to the door of the salon. He opened the door and gestured for someone on the other side, and, a moment later, a young girl came into the room. She was dressed like the servants standing in the hall, if a little less formally. Her skin sparkled like snow in sunlight, and her straw-colored hair was piled so high that Rin wondered how she kept her balance. The prince guided the girl by the hand. They stopped in front of Rin, and the girl dipped into a low curtsy.
Demoiselle Rin, this is Marcite. She will be looking after you during your stay.
Demoiselle, it is an honor,
Marcite squeaked from the floor. And completely unnecessary, Rin said, panic rising in her throat as she felt the situation start to slip out of her control. I am more than capable of looking after myself.
Oh, nonsense,
Zithril said, waving his hand through the air, shooing Rin's refusal away like gnats at a picnic.
You are my guest, and I must make my guests comfortable. Marcite, the bath, we must get Demoiselle ready for dinner. I will have dresses sent up to you to choose from.
Dresses? Rin asked.
Oui, for when you join us for dinner tonight.
Your Highness, that really is unnecessary, Rin said, cooling her voice in the hopes of slowing down this runaway coach.
Your Highness,
the prince repeated, wincing at the words as he moved from the bedroom to the salon, Rin hot on his heels.
So formal. Please, call me Zitril, or Zit if you like.
Now it was Rin's turn to wince, and the prince laughed.
Perhaps not. We shall work on nicknames at dinner. You must come and cheer up what will be a dreadfully dull dinner without you. No, no, I insist, and I am the prince, so if I insist, you have to come,
he said, opening the door and slipping into the hall, smiling like a fox that had just outwitted a cat.
I will see you at dinner, Demoiselle.
And with that, he closed the door. Rin stood there for a moment, open-mouthed and blinking in frustration. This was not the plan. The plan was to discreetly infiltrate the palace as a maid or kitchen girl, not sit down to dinner with the royal family. This was fine, Rin tried to reassure herself. This was still salvageable. She could make this work. Adapt, Rin, adapt. Then she looked around the salon, and her heart sank. She marched back into the bedroom and confirmed what she already knew. There were no windows in these rooms, and there were only two doors.
Demoiselle?
Marcite's polite voice came from behind her. Rin turned to see the girl standing by the bath. No windows, two doors, one of which led to a hall lined with servants, and she had just been given a schedule and a very polite, well-dressed guard.
Your bath, Demoiselle,
Marcite reminded her. Rin undressed and let the girl help her into the bath, all the time telling herself that this was fine. It was not what she had planned originally, but it was fine. This was still completely workable. This was absolutely fine. However, another voice could not help but remind her that a prison was still a prison, no matter how soft the carpet or how charming the jailer.
You've been listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston, narrated by K.E. Preston. Thought Thief is also available in paperback and ebook at kepreston.net. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a review or even sharing this with a friend. If you've really enjoyed what you've heard, there is bonus content available on our Patreon. Every dollar there allows me and my family to keep doing what we love, which is sharing this story with you. Thought Thief is recorded and edited by me, K.E. Preston, with editing help from Hanson Lyman and Mark Gardner. Thought Thief is a work of fiction written by K.E. Preston, with developmental editing and linguistics help by Amanda Berry. Thought Thief is a Lit Lab production. Thank you for listening.